Fire, what you saying?
Yes, sir. Give thanks today again, you know? Joyful reason I go on.
Serious thing. We have a special guest today. Man with numerous hats. I don't know how to introduce the man. I know you're a chef still, but there's so much different things going on. So we're just going to say multi-talented chef, you know, author, and the whole vibe, you know. Peter Ivey, what are you saying?
Wagwan. Give thanks, you know. Thank you for having me. Good afternoon, everybody.
No, serious thing. And Fai, you want to kickstart the thing?
Yeah, all right. Then, all right. You know what? I'm really want more. You give them a true introduction of yourself, and then like just we put in the whole Mission Food Possible. Make the people them know what Mission Food Possible do after you introduce yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm known as an entrepreneur, right? That is probably the one as my true authentic self, right? I'm also an author. I'm a chef, which lead me to a lot of my entrepreneurial projects or endeavors have something to do with food, right? I'm also a speaker, and I'm also a writer as well. So not only I became an author recently over the course of the coronavirus pandemic, but I'm also a writer. I write food articles on hunger, food insecurity, and I'm also the president of Mission Food Possible, which is a nonprofit we're very proud of. What we've been trying to do is kind of throw our hats in the fight against hunger and food insecurity. Mission Food Possible is rooted in the identification of what we call MVPs, most valuable produce. Once we've identified the MVPs of a community, then we now teach that community how to effectively prepare nutritious dishes with their respective MVPs. So yeah, founder of a nonprofit, entrepreneur. I've started a number of businesses over the years, including a company called the Reggae Chefs, which is a work to promote and preserve Jamaican culture all around the globe. Yeah, that's what I've been up to, man.
I was reading the Forbes article again, and I realized the title. After reading the article, usually you read the title first and then you proceed to reading the article. But I started reading the article and saw the title, and the title was this, and they were saying about that you may have the answer to hunger.
Right? Yeah.
In an objective sense, what is the answer to hunger? Like what are these?
Yeah, you know, say. So, you know, when that article dropped, and the title, you know, is a very heavy one. So me, I say, like, I even like when I see it, I say to myself, say, whoa. We know that Mission Food Possible does important work, but for someone to look at it and say, based on all the other suggested solutions for hunger, this project might actually come closest. And then to answer your question, Atachi, there is no one solution, because everywhere you go across the world, hunger looks different. You understand? But where Mission Food Possible separates itself is that we take a grassroots approach to our contribution, right? And what that means is empowering the people, right? So many of the solutions and approaches to solving global hunger come from top down, come from government and policies and from academia. People who really, for the most part, don't know anything about food or the community. Think about food, look at food, eat food, and prepare food. So Mission Food Possible really come from that angle, and we are now realizing that when you sift through technologies and on the innovations and the new seeds that are being invented to be planted here and there and everywhere, what we really should be looking at is the community and how to empower the community to understand how food works so that we can protect ourselves. So I think from that perspective, that's where Forbes is coming from. Like, wait a minute, hold up. We featured so many technology-based solutions, but this solution seemed to strike at the very heart of the matter, which is people. So there is no one solution. It's a dynamic approach. And Mission Food Possible is just one of those approaches. And I'm grateful that people see the significance of it.
And Faye here, I know, I saw there in the article they were speaking about demonic children that die from malnutrition, right? So please give me an example of what you would do. You would go to a particular area, right? Mm-hmm. And you would identify whatever indigenous crop they have, and you would show them how mm-hmm. to interpret, right? So my question yep. is now, this would work more in Caribbean, or how would that work in a city?
So listen, that's a really, really great question. So to identify any geographic location, any location's MVPs is based on a number of factors. It could be based on a nutritional factor. It could be based on access. It could be based on the cost. It could be based on how that food or that crop is coming into a community. And so not all factors will affect all cities and towns. So with a urban place like New York City, right? Some of those factors will be taken out. For example, in the Caribbean, we'll say, okay, this is the product or the produce that make it to the market most frequent based on these environmental factors. In New York, we'll say, well, based on, I'll give a perfect example. During COVID-19, food supply and food distribution was heavily disrupted, right? And so if we were supposed to apply the mission Food Possible, the MVP tool that we use, the assessment tool, we would say, okay, what trucks are still coming into New York City? What produce are still making it into the city? And based on those factors, nutritional factor, accessibility, where the food is, that's how we would basically figure out what the MVPs are. And then we'll train the community with those crops.
Sure.
I mean, understand when, I felt like I go all the way around a while ago.
Because city would be seems to be more economics than if you're exactly. in an area where you actually have produce, you will work with what's being grown or what's more accessible there.
Exactly.
All right.
I you know, one of the main things that we realize, Mission Food Possible focus on is like food insecurity, right? For the average person, they know of hunger, know of not having any food, they know of different type of suffering. Like, in how you compile what food insecurity is and as opposed to what food security really is, like without a whole dictionary sense of what they tell us mm-hmm. what it is, so the average person can understand, you know, say. A lot of people might be food insecure and not aware of it because right. they think it's both from one standpoint. How would you kind of classify food insecurity in general?
So you see, food insecurity for me is probably the more dangerous of all the conditions out there, because the food insecurity don't have a face, Atachi, right? And so, to strictly define it, it's not having sufficient access to nutritious food, safe food, right? Or enough of that food. And that could be anybody, right? So we are familiar with the extreme cases of starvation or the extreme cases of hunger, which we can see sometimes. And they show us the images in Northeast Africa, sometime in North Africa. But food insecurity hits closer to home. That could be our neighbor, Atachi. That could be our coworker, because anybody can be stricken with the condition of not having access to the food that they need to eat. So if you don't have enough food to eat, if you're finding that you're eating below what is recommended as your daily intake, you are food insecure. If you're eating unhealthy food, if you're eating a lot of food, let's say you have whole heap of food, but you're consuming canned products, for example, processed foods, right? We are insecure.
Exactly. And
we
exactly.
are.
Yes. Exactly. And the reason why I'm asking that, because right. you know, you have majority of people that does fast food and the price is presented to them
with right.
A substance towards the body, and they don't realize that they're food insecure, even though they have this in front of them and they might get a belly full now. They not realize the whole trap was set up for them, make them food insecure, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So the miscons. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's the next thing I want to throw in there that mm-hmm. you brought up a great idea, is that the whole food desert concept goes mm-hmm. into the food insecurity, because you have people who do eat. You get what I'm saying? But what they have access to is borderline criminal, because you have many people, depending on where you live in America, there is no produce there. Like mm-hmm. facts, it's just canned goods and fast food, you know?
So, exactly. If you take areas like certain parts of Brooklyn and certain parts of Bronx, their only access to fresh produce is in a corner store, right? And the corner store, as you know, if you ever walk into a bodega, you know, so that's not the place you want to get your fruits and veggie from. You understand? And so a lot of people living in these areas don't have a green market or a farmer's market anywhere close to them. Those places, like those things, are restricted to certain communities. So if you look at food insecurity like that, you realize that even in a city like New York that is looked upon as doing well, you see the big skyscrapers, you see executives going to places in them suit and money are flowing through the city. A lot of people are food insecure without knowing it, because the trick is you have plenty of fast food places set up on corners to trick you, as you said, to manipulate your mind. Tell you that you have a lot of food, but it depends. But depending on what you're eating, you're food insecure. If that's going to lead you to having a non-communicable disease like diabetes or cardiovascular disease, you are food insecure. It doesn't matter what kind of jewelry or car you drive.
Do you notice, or in your experience, is it hard to educate people in regards to the importance of what they put inside themselves? Because it seems like, as you said, people value more what's on their body more than what's going on, what they put in their body and what's going on in their body.
Yeah, man, absolutely. It's a big challenge, because first and foremost, a lot of people aren't even familiar with the term food insecurity. Right? Them know, you know, most people know when them feel hungry, right? And when you're hungry, you eat what's at hand, right? Or your belly full, right? And so just the term food insecure has been a challenge, because you can't fix a problem that people don't know that they have. All they know that is that we have increased rates in, nobody can doubt that, increased rates in diabetes, increased rates of cancer, increased rates of cardiovascular diseases, right? But nobody's really connecting it. I mean, you know, when I say nobody, I'm talking about the layman in our community. We're just willy-nilly just going about life, right? Without understanding what we're putting in our bodies. And so, yeah, that's a big challenge, because the knowledge and the awareness is just not there. And they'll tell you all sorts of things. They'll tell you, you know, how can we be food insecure when, you know, every Friday I take my kids to McDonald's and we eat a belly full of meal, you know, a belly full of food.
Continue.
Yeah, so, and the ignorance, right, is not just in the USA, it's in the Caribbean as well, where you would think that we would be more aware of eating nutritious food and what we should be eating. But let me tell you, Atachi, it's like we are straying more and more from our culinary and cultural identity, right, in the Caribbean. And so even now, when I try to implement Mission Food Possible in certain places, they'll say to you, well, no, there's no food insecurity here, because we have, you might have a lot of mango trees in a particular area, right? And they'll say, well, if my hunger, me just eat mango and go to bed, right? Well, while mangoes are healthy for you, if you're feeding your school-age children palm mango day and night, right, then that also constitutes as food insecurity. So we meet up on a lot of myths and a lot of misconceptions about what hunger and food insecurity is right throughout the journey.
Yeah, recently I realized that, because the Empress was doing a capstone and it was talking about food insecurity, but in schools, like mostly mm-hmm. CUNY and things like, and then I realized that this thing really, 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 really affect a lot of students. So imagine how much impact food insecurity have and how children processing at school, any student at all, from children from the smallest to the highest age. Just imagine the impact that food insecurity might have on the way they learn, the way they process things, the way they are transitioning to the workplace. And majority of people is ignorant about that.
And exactly. Yeah, go ahead.
No, fire. And what we need to remember, I can speak about American school systems. For the most part, the same company that provides food for the prison, they have the same contract for the schools.
Yes.
And the school, the what they receive is not balanced at all. And even mm-hmm. the time they get it, because you know, if you're at a school that's like from middle school to the seniors have lunch at like 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying? So you're eating the trash Our breakfast is sugar. Lunch is trash. Then you're in zombie mode by noon. So ain't really too much focus on learning going on for the duration of the day, you know?
Exactly. And I love what you just said, you know, you said, you know, a lot of sugar to start the day. And then for some part of the day, you're in a zombie mode. If you think about what that looks like physically on a child, our children are being diagnosed as hyperactive, having ADD, ADHD. And a lot of these are incorrectly diagnosed, right? It's because the children are reflecting what they're putting inside their bodies, either the type of food or the lack of food. A child can't focus if they're hungry, or a child can't focus with the wrong type of food in their system, right? And so, yeah, it's a big problem from every level of education. And we're seeing it now. People are paying attention to college campuses around the country and in Jamaica. The Reggae Chefs just did a demonstration for UTEC, right? The new school year. And I'm not sure if this has been done before, but the fact that we know we're looking at college students who, because of coronavirus, might have less spending money, less money to spend on food. That's a big deal, you know? That's a big deal. Yeah.
Realistically, when we really sit down and when we really check it, like certain things to many people might seem simple, but they don't even see the effectiveness. Like when we even look on the, I saw one of the reggae, the mission food possible thing, I think it was in Portland at a school, and you say like, you have breakfast, porridge, or these type of thing where the average person in Jamaica, when they hear about it for the first time, it sounds so weird to them that they might not even be open to trying it, not realizing that these things can become norm and help sustain the whole development of the community upon a small sense and upon a large sense. I know it's a question that ties into my thing. How important is do you think local farmers are towards any economy, any surrounding as it relates to building the whole aspect of food security and everything in that line?
Very, 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 very important. Very important. And they are becoming more and more important. And I'm beginning to wonder if we are, how much trouble are we in? Because farmers are having an issue recruiting new farmers. That's actually a thing, right? That the local farmer, to me, is a dying breed, right? Because they're having issues recruiting new farmers, and local farmers are so very important. One, from the perspective of the economy, agriculture and selling a country's crop is hugely important. So when the people are straying away, are not encouraged to stimulate that part of their society, that's a big, big problem. And we're actually leaving money on the table. Right? Health. Eat what comes from the soil. Eat what you grow, grow what you eat. And if you are not growing it, find the person who will grow it and eat it. Right? And so that is absolutely important to health. Understand? Something that we're not talking about enough is environment. So I know this conversation is about food insecurity, but focusing on supporting our local farmers is actually great for the environment and great for climate change, right? Because soil health is becoming really, really big right now. How important is our soil right now? Like, we have no idea that we're losing most of our topsoil, which means that in a few years, and, you know, I hear some people, some experts are saying in about 60 years, we won't have enough topsoil to farm. So a lot of our food will be coming from processed sources. So supporting our local farmers actually increased, allow us to have good turnover, allow us to eat healthy and stimulate our local economy.
And I want to touch on something you said previously, right? In regards to the farmers is that what I noticed, my family farms, right? You have people there in Elizabeth and people in St. Anne's. And what I'm hearing is that some are fortunate to have a little link with the hotel. But some are struggling to sell their crops because people really on a KFC vibe, like the whole Sunday dinner and the whole cooking thing, that culture is kind of depleting. And that's why, and I believe that's why, you remember how you said it's hard to replace the farmers? But I think some of the younger generation, well, if you're doing it for your kind of, we want to call it, we call it when you farm for yourself again, and Fire, what do you call it when you farm for yourself again? Yeah.
Slip. Like when a personal.
Yeah. Subsistence farming.
Subsistence farming. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're not doing subsistence farming, but to actually approach it from a business aspect. And I think the younger generation is see their elders suffering financially from it. And I think that's what's keeping them away from it. And it has nothing to do with the farmers, but it has to do with the decisions by the government in regards to allowing so much imported goods to come in and kill the market, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, because the supermarket in Jamaica is filled with overseas product.
Right, right. No, that's a very good point. I just recorded a video to post on social media talking about the link between culinary and cultural identity. And I touched on the prolific, how Jamaicans are crazy about fast food like KFC, right? So it's interesting that you brought that point up. But here's how important that is. The youngsters, billions of dollars is being spent, actually, without us even realizing it, to ensure that our youngsters don't appreciate good food, right? The big brands of whether they are fast foods or processed food giants are spending billions of dollars to discredit how important it is to support our local farmers. And the ones who do farm, like you mentioned St. Elizabeth, and that's considered like the breadbasket of Jamaica. A lot of our foods come from St. Elizabeth. Those farmers are selecting a crop that they think would be valuable, right? So here's a couple of things wrong with that approach. They're selecting a crop that they think would be valuable to the tourism industry. So they might approach a hotel and hotel will say, yeah, we'll get our tomatoes from you. And a farmer will go out and plant up acres of tomato. First of all, that is to plant just one crop on your land is ruining the land, right? Your land should have a variety of food. So not only does that approach not good, but here's what happened when the food supply gets disrupted. In Jamaica had a unique problem recently. COVID-19 came, tourism industry shut down. Nobody's coming. So the tourism industry not buying the food from the farmers. You know what happened to all that food? It went to waste. A lot of it went to waste, I should say, not all of it, because there were strong initiatives. And then those initiatives ran into roadblocks because now that you have, in some areas, you have people with little food. And then in some areas, you have an overabundance of food. But the community didn't know that there was an overabundance of food because that abundance of food was not created for them. It was created specifically to be distributed to the tourism industry. So now there had to be a major marketing campaign letting people know that there was excess tomato, excess this, excess that. And a lot of the foods were exotic foods like eggplants and squash and zucchini that most Jamaicans and Caribbean people don't know what to do with. Make sense?
Make whole heap of sense.
Because yeah, so they really thought themselves, yeah.
Right. So there was this unique issue. COVID created this really eye-opener in some places where, on one hand, you're seeing images and videos of people at dash for food. Farmers, not people. Farmers at dash for food. And you wonder where all this food come from. You get to realize that. There is one food supply chain for the tourism industry and one food supply chain for the communities, right? And there was no preconceived plan for what if there's a disruption? How do we get the food to divert into the community? You understand? And so you had this issue where you had this whole heap of food and people just looking at it like, well, Jamaicans don't really like eat eggplant like that. And a lot of people may actually hear a man pick up the eggplant. The only egg we mean will come from chicken. So there was this lack of knowledge about this overabundance of food that should not be the case.
Yeah, because we find majority of the people in places like Jamaica, them only know about starch. Like we read about this recently already. We said them only if a man not eat flour today. It knows, all right, you know your flour, automatically everybody know white rice, a man going to eat, all
right.
So them things seem so foreign. Me even say, like, I watch an episode or something and I see them talk about arugula and them I said those fancy foreign stuff. So it's like, major so much things not known to them because they're right. One bracket.
And it's deer in Atachi. And it's deer in you know. That's the crazy part, you know, is that it can be grown there and it is grown there. But it's grown to please the foreign taste particular of market, the visitors.
You
know?
Yeah.
Right? And so something like COVID comes and it creates a situation where people are food insecure, but didn't need to be.
I want to ask you one question too, as a guy from Spain town, right?
Yeah, man.
Yo, when did this like love for KFC take place? Because I remember I used to go down there and it was chicken and chips, right? It wasn't chicken and fries, it was chicken and chips, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like this, like when I go down there now, it's literally lines and just it's just a hangout spot. And the man used to pass through, but people were still cooking and people were still eating Jamaican food. But where did this like just infatuation with like fast food and Pizza Hut start in Jamaica? So,
all right. So it as I said before, there is Mission Food Pass will talk about shifting mindsets. In order to eat a certain way, you have to shift your perspective and shift your mindset, right? No, I was always aware that although I know that this is the right thing to do, or this is the most effective thing to do, it's almost an impossible task because places like KFC and the pizza companies spend billions of dollars to shift that same mindset that I'm trying to shift in their direction. And their budget to do so outweigh the biggest budget of any country in any healthy eating campaign. And so you got to realize our young people, our children, our people are constantly being like pied the pipe, like, you know, like the Pied Piper, right? Constantly being bombarded with messages, right, of why this is cool to eat. That's one thing. Two, the high salt content and the taste for processed food is coming from not just fast food, it's coming from other foods as well. But here's the thing, all these foods tend to have a similar taste. So once you develop a taste, once we're young people from young, develop a taste for salty food, sweet food, sugary food, then they're not going to reach for everything that falls into that category. And what we're seeing now is over time, as we look further away from the farmer, right? We are creating a zombie nation, right? Of people who feel like the healthiest option on a fast food menu qualifies as healthy food.
Yeah, true. I you know what? That's one of the unique cases then when we realize about Jamaica in particular is like in America, the way our fast food companies advertise, they advertise based off economics. So it's like Wendy's, you have 4 for $4 or whatever. So people get caught by the dollar. But there's a unique situation in Jamaica as it relates to fast food where we still not really grasp where it's opposite because fast food in Jamaica is somewhat like of a high class type of thing, you know, when you go KFC is like a big deal as opposed to going to a regular local restaurant. How you see the whole economics play, like it's a shift from how the America advertised to Jamaica.
It has shifted, Atachi. It has shifted. All right. The new technologies applied to the mass production of chickens have made poultry very, very, very cheap. So countries like America are giving healthy eating a go, meaning they are somewhat getting through to a big part of the population that this food isn't good for you. So you find that a lot of fast food restaurants are not making as much money in first world countries. So they're shifting their operations to third world countries, right? Because now they can sell the unhealthy stuff cheap than they could several years ago. With the food being so cheap, it is now accessible to everybody, not just the wealthy, not just the rich, not just the well-to-do. So chicken Atachi is so cheap right now that places like some fast food places are shifting their operations to African countries and Caribbean countries, because that's where they're still making money. They're still able to brainwash and sell that food to now everybody, not just well-to-do people, but because it's so cheap now to produce, they can sell it to everybody. And that's what... And that's why when we travel around in the States or other places and we go, wow, we don't see that much KFC. Well, we still see McDonald's, because they still do them. Whatever they're doing, they're still doing it right. But we look and we go, well, KFC isn't even that popular here. Why is it so popular in Jamaica? Because they've shifted their resources to places like that, like to kill us. Because some of the healthy eating campaign in places like America have been successful. They have been. They have effectively, like, people are realizing now that even if they can't switch to healthy eating fully, they're kind of balancing out their diet, which leaves no room for some of the traditional fast food places. So what they've done is shifted their operations to places and then now using all the technology to drive down the cost of things like poultry.
And I want to say one next wicked tactic I've been preying. I was actually looking to this for a reason we could do in the future, but... So you know, you mentioned America. America has this what you want to call it, food revolution to a certain extent in regards to people trying to eat healthy, right? But if you check the healthy dish on these menus, right, nutrition wise, they're actually worse than the regular dish. So you have like a chicken salad, right? The chicken salad is more dangerous than the burger now, but they repackage it as healthy. So people definitely need to keep your eyes open in regards to the repackaged healthy food that you're getting from fast food places, you know?
Absolutely. You know, I've been saying the other day that if they don't get us one way, they get us another way. And so the thing is, we have to pay more attention to being intensely focused on where our food is coming from and learning how to grow some of our food. And that can be done even in urban settings. But they'll get us one way or another, because as long as money is being made through health, I mean, people make money off of sick people. People make money off of getting people hooked on a particular thing, right? Even if it's packaged and branded as healthy, right? People are making money off of that. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. You read the nutritional factor and you're thinking, wait, how this can have so much calories? How this can have so much sodium? Like, why is the sodium level so high?
What advice would you give to just your average person who's trying to, realistically, they're working, they have kids, you know, what advice would you give to them to start preparing more nutritious meals?
Here's some things that I think people can do right away. Do a quick Google search. Where is the closest farmer's market? Right? Where's the closest farmer's market? Like, where the more local you buy, the closer your food is to you, the healthier it's going to be. The further away it's coming from, right, is we're going to be compromised. So where's your local farmer's market? Find that place. Start integrating fruits and veggies in your diets. And you mentioned having children. A lot of children, while as adults we might know the importance, it might become a challenge, or it has been, or it is a challenge, incorporating veggies into the diets of children. Start doing that, right? And you can do that in some really creative and innovative ways. The internet is, YouTube is filled with videos of creative ways to include fruits and veggies in our diets, and getting that from a local source. That is something that people can start doing immediately. Then read. Don't just be led blindly. Read, because sometimes these companies are compelled to put, not even compelled, regulated. They have to put things on their labels, right? That gives you clues as to what you're ingesting. But most of us don't read. We just buy. We just buy and eat, right? So those are some things that I think someone can get up today and just start doing.
Yeah, a real thing, because you know, you check the fancy labels them designed with a specific thing in mind. Like, remember, as it mentioned that too, we keep on a stress to the people, them a book where everybody need to read biology. You can read about that aspect of the thing where it's like the packaging distract you from from seeing the actual product.
Exactly. The thing, yeah.
But you in your subconscious don't even have a clue that is leading you towards doing that. So with importance, you mentioned that too.
Exactly. And you know, these big food companies, they'll make the same product, package the same product one way and package the same product a whole other way. You know what I mean? Just to, you mentioned, you know, I thought you have a song where you mentioned cannibalism in the business world, right? You're mute, right? Right?
Yeah. No, reality.
Right. That happens in the food world, right?
True.
Where when you're vying for shelf space in a supermarket, you'll actually package up. You know, what companies are doing to trick us is the one company we make the CM, let's give an example. We make the CM sauce, right? Mm-hmm. Package the CM sauce one way under a different brand, right? And package the same exact sauce under one different brand with different imagery. To mm-hmm. see which one we're going to go for and why.
Yeah, A/B testing type of
testing
type of thing too. Reality.
Yeah. Right.
We see that amongst media too. I realized one of the industry, as you mentioned that again, to give it just bring me forward to a thought. In the media industry, we see that a lot. Like mm-hmm. the scope of music, you see, you will have a label, but them put this, them have subsidiaries under them label where this music release under it, and then you get this thing. So yeah, so you couldn't really see the intention of the label, because while you see derogatory music releasing under that one, and then you see some positive music releasing under that one, they don't show the morality. So it's a thing mm-hmm. where capitalism and is where it comes to food security, every single thing as it has to do with the people and the consumption of anything at all, them don't really show morality, and it kind of lead the people in a whole misguided
direction. Exactly.
I have a next question still as a man that's ambitious mm-hmm. and we rate that still, right? I know a lot of our people suffer from confidence. How you deal with confidence and fire dealing with the ups and downs of being an entrepreneur and staying focused and keep fighting? Because people think when you're doing things it's some skyrocket thing, like you just try and go straight to the moon. But how do you deal with the ups and downs of different things you try?
That's a really, really, really good question. There's no real easy way to answer that, you know. I think confidence, right? Let's start there. I'm not always confident, right? I definitely would not want to give the impression that I have this infinite source of confidence that I walk out with and it's just there, right? One may not see though when I'm lacking confidence, right? But there has to be something bigger than you. And that's what I tell everybody, right? You must see us. You must understand your role in this world and see a purpose bigger than yourself. When you see a purpose bigger than yourself, it's like you have this giant star that you're moving towards, unrelenting about your progress. But I do know that a lot of our people are lacking the confidence to do things, but it starts early. It starts very early. Parents have a role to play in telling our kids. I have a son, right? I have a 9-year-old son. And I see having the confidence to go after his dreams as a well, right? That I have to start pouring into from early, right? And so I tell my boy, I'm proud of you. You can do this. You can do that. You know that you are amazing at this. You are amazing at that. Because if I should trace back my ambitions, it definitely come from the adults in my life, teachers, my parents, my aunts, mm-hmm. telling me from early. So you find that I do have this well that I can dip into whenever I want, because people were pouring into it from early. You have a lot of people who are, you know, you have a lot of adults who exist who don't have a well of confidence because they've been beaten down since they were young. They've been tricked and told that they're inferior since they're young, mm-hmm. right? And so how do you grow? How are you an inferior child, right? You're going to grow up to be an inferior, you're going to grow up to be an inferior adult, right? You're going to feel inferior, I should say, right? And so, and there's another part, you know, another part to my answer. It's definitely doing a lot of soul searching and knowing what your purpose is. When you know what your purpose is, you know exactly what you're going to do when you get up in the morning. And when you stumble, right, you're not confused as to what you should be doing because you know exactly what your purpose is. A lot of people don't know their purpose. And so if you're just moving, even if you look like you're making progress and you stumble, some people might stop, right?
Yeah, but when you're
they give up mentally. But when you're absolutely clear, like Atachi, if you're absolutely clear that music is what you want to do, right? Then it gets you up in the mornings with the disappointments that come with it, right? The disappointments don't outweigh this dream that you can see when you achieve your purpose or when you're living in your purpose. And so for me, I found my purpose. Like, my purpose is entrepreneurship. My purpose is making sure my community is empowered. So any disappointments I feel because I'm moving in that purpose, I just shake it off and say, okay, how do I get over this? Because I'm still more fortunate than others because I'm living in my purpose. I spoke to a man, he was about 85 years old recently, and he said to me, one of the saddest things in life is a human being that has no purpose.
Yeah, man, reality, and man. So, you have a whole heap of, as we say, we always say, reason about that already too, we say, you have a bees come from earth, them know them supposed to pollinate plants and flowers, the ants know them right. Supposed to work together to collect food to bring back to the queen in the nest. But majority of human beings live their whole life and without a soul purpose, you know? And that really exactly. Kind of cause a whole chaos and a lack of ambition, you know?
Exactly. And you watch the people who know what their purpose is, right? Look at the folks who know for sure what their purpose is. They are unrelenting. You almost think so them make out a bulletproof vest or you know, like they have this armor, but it's not true. But the absolute key is, why are you here? Why are you here? Why am I here? I figured that out. And so I'm able to get up every day with all disappointments. And trust me, I face some grand disappointments. But I know what my purpose is. And I'll die, you know, in that purpose.
And I just want to clear up that disappointment thing. You know, it's just like, I ain't like saying that word too much. I just more deal with lessons to the truth. You know?
Sure. Lessons, with things,
disappointment, and it kind of, it's best it didn't work out that way. Or something you need to learn, or you just didn't have the skill at the time. Or sometimes it's just not the right time. Because a lot of things got to fall into place for things to work out, you know. And I think that's what flopped most people in regards to the lack of purpose. Mm-hmm. They don't have no grit. And this generation, they can't deal with obstacles. You know, they can't deal with the adversity. You know, so
but they're not resilient.
No resilience, serious thing. You know, because anybody doing something, you know, say the rule rough. rough. People see you doing things and they think everything's sweet, but they don't know. Say, yo, the thing rough to get where you at. Yeah, rough.
No, it's true. And then here's the thing: people don't even know that for the most part. The first thing you try isn't the thing you're going to be successful at.
Not at all, yeah.
The first thing you try is just a lesson. You just have to get it going, right? And so you tell an aspiring entrepreneur that, and they're like, well, what are you talking about? And they don't understand the years that you've put in. When they see a successful company, there's about 10 companies that did not make it that has given you the lessons to build this one. You understand? And so, there's no resilience. There's no patience.
No patience in the instant society. Mm-hmm. People don't understand it takes years to grow your craft and grow a skill to do something to have, just to be functional. Not even get to a place where you want to identify a success, whatever you identify it as, but just to be able to do it properly, it takes years to do something. And there's so many skills you have to learn. But I think that's what people are failing to understand is that the skills that you need takes time to learn.
Yes. You know? Yes, you can't. There are no shortcuts. There are no shortcuts to it. Yeah. Yeah, and our young people are lacking that for sure.
Yeah, really.
All Art, mm-hmm. Artax, you have a next question?
No, I want to say the thing fulfilling because I have two more questions, but the reasoning end up stretch in it. Answer it. I mean, I said, look, I don't want to answer my two questions. Let me start.
Well, now, Fire, we give thanks for the work and we give thanks for the example still, you know, because we love anybody that deal with progress, you know?
Yes, I.
Yeah, man, of course. And same here, man. Guys, keep up the great work. I love what you guys are doing. I love the conversations. Is it me?
Yeah, the powers, man. No, man, seriously. Go and do it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then last question I have, yo, how you end up writing that loop? That's what I'm saying. I respect the man because you have the chef going. How you end up writing that loop?
Yo, it's so. I end up writing at loop. Listen. So, let me before I answer that question directly. I have time.
You have time. You have time.
So I've never been one to shy away from an opportunity, right? I am in the truest sense of the word an entrepreneur. I spot an opportunity, I seize that opportunity, right? So the building up my cred in food, right, and having these businesses, having workshops on entrepreneurship, and people recognizing that I'm not just a chef, but my sense of social responsibility is very high. I tend to write my own, like I write my ideas down, right? If I have a concept or a thought about something, I write it down. And I submitted a press release to Loop one time, and they loved it. They loved the press release. They asked me who write it, if somebody said, I said, no, man, let me write it. And so they recognized that not only have these thoughts, right, on where we should be as a community when it comes to food and entrepreneurship, they recognize that I can also express that as well, you know, by writing. So that's how I got there. They invited me to share my thoughts, and then boom, it was off and running.
That's a good look still, you know.
Mm-hmm. You want to keep it the multifaceted vibration, mm-hmm. and as it progressive and in the right direction where we are trying to aim towards, because that, you know, people are putting work, but the work where they are putting it destructive, you know?
Exactly.
And that's one of the key things them for when you even have the multifaceted, you can't have your hands on anything. Because sometimes when you're multifaceted, you tend to have distractions come along quicker. Somebody want to be an investor in a business or something, or they want to do something with spin up and it not have no ethical reasons behind it, you know?
Exactly. And Atachi, there's something I want to add to that. So when the invitation came for me to write, you know, at first I was saying, I'm not a writer, right? I'm not a writer. I write, right? Because, you know, somebody who writes well is different from somebody who's a writer, right? There's a difference.
True.
So for me, I'm thinking, yeah, thanks for the compliment. I know that I can write, but I'm not a writer. There's just no way. And then something hit me. One of my greatest inspirations for the work that I do is Marcus Garvey, right? And it was not lost on me that Garvey was very prolific with the pen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, I wonder if this is a natural progression in my journey. And I looked at it and I said, all right, as long as I'm writing about the things I'm already doing, then it makes sense, because my inspiration had a lot to do with journalism. Journalism and getting the word out and communicating with the people is a big part of Garvey's work. And so I found it almost as a sign. And so what started off as, I'm not a writer, I don't know if I could do this, has turned into a very positive thing. People read my articles all the time and share them with me. And now, after doing it for quite some time, I now recognize as a writer. So for any young people who might see this video, before you turn away an opportunity, step back, take some time, and look further down the road and see if that opportunity plays, have a role to play in your purpose.
True. Reality soon. Mm-hmm. Man, we give thanks to the energy.
Time enough teachings to inspire the people that they could use.
It's right, man.
Mm-hmm.
direction. That is direction in my life, you know? So, them reasoning are fulfilling, man. We give thanks to them reasoning all the time, man. I tell them.
We give thanks for the reasoning still, yo. So, we got to keep the link, you know?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. Guys, thank you for having me on. It was a privilege. And I look forward to who's coming up next and the next episode.